Blog Talk Radio.
Sonic effects, the music with the wobbles in the background. It's a pleasure to have you join us today. This is well into the year 2017. What are we looking at now? 70 days left in the year. So it goes. The year comes to an end, so that we can have a period of renewal. Just like you and I. One thing about us that I've been thinking about in the last couple years, would you mind a little bit of look into the mirror? Oh, maybe we should lighten up on that a little bit. I came across a note I written a little while ago. It was a direction. Look away from the mirror, man of conscience. You may not like what you see. But not to look is an unprincipled life. I don't know. Some of us have difficulty coming to terms with the influence not only of ourselves, but of what we represent, what we symbolize to people. I keep forgetting that. It's funny in a way. That I wake up every day and I don't feel any, that I am more than a symbol. I don't feel symbolic. I am who I am. But in fact, whether I accept it or not, I'm particularly proud of some of the symbols that I represent. Some of the ideas that me as a symbol represents. I feel that toward my role with the Masonic Order and to the cause, the purpose that we get brings us together in harmony with some beautiful ideas and serious-minded efforts. The pleasure I'm always amazed at the efforts made by who I consider just average Joes of interesting ability, but fellows, people that have fellows. Sorry, that's not real. The people, men and women, who are able to think beyond their own needs and contribute in their own way. To meet the needs and assist others, the human context, no matter where we are, how downtrodden we might be, that spirit, that hope continues. That's a flame that is never extinguished, though there are many interesting efforts to try and do that. There are certain things that we come to accept, and yet don't ever accept a despotism. We don't accept, but we know that we don't have a remedy for it yet, except us, except worthy people, a sense of generosity and fairness, the golden rule, that thread that takes us through all of the major faiths of the world, and the masonry that steps, that stretches the norm into an exceptional examination. There are those who would point fingers at you and I and declare that because we examine unorthodox and unconventional ideas with an open mind, that we must somehow be adherents of those ideas, supporters of those ideas. That's a that's a bit rash. That's a bit rash. It is, in a sense, a valid opinion. People have a right to their opinions. But the extremism has a consequence. And you and I understand the effects of zealotry and extremism. We know that. Maybe it's extreme when you and I are at the, our emotion overwhelms us when we're at the theater, when we see something that's just compelling. Is that an extreme or a danger? Remember once upon a time, and it was taught to me as a bit of a joke, that people were afraid of the effect of so-called modern music on youth. I found that it came out of a period where heavy corporal discipline and punishment was thought to be the effective way of raising a child. We learned afterwards to the detriment of many, many people. That was completely inaccurate. That the intention wasn't in fact being received. I want to share something with you today. Is that a little bit? This is about an article that came to me regarding Carol Dweck. Some of you may know the name. And we're going to talk about just a bit about her work. What she discovered on examination, and I put it to you because, in a way, this doesn't do is suggest the aftermath. When this is about the effects of something that occurs in childhood, what happens when the child grows up? I think it was Wordsworth that captures it. Child is the father of the man. Yeah. My heart leaps up. My heart leaps up when I behold a rainbow in the sky. So was it when my life began. So is it now I am a man. So be it when I shall grow old or let me die. The child is father of the man, and I could wish my days to be bound each to each by natural piety. There you go, William. Beautiful work. A gift, yeah, that is shared. The great poets of the world have shared that gift with us forever. But he makes that hint at natural piety. It's really when reason and nature became the path that we followed, coming out of those periods of great superstition, the darkness, eh? And that produced the likes of this order. I'm going to talk today about some of the incompleteness of the model, but here. Just absorb this, if you will, and give me a little bit of feedback. Yeah, you've got maybe I should get a private Twitter site. Maybe I should do that. But right now, I still have an email site, MasonicFX@gmail.com. Now, here's for the think tank out there, here's what I put to you. She was studying children. What made some children? She wanted the question that she asked is, what made some children give up in the face of initial failures, and others motivated? It's an interesting enough question. Children who chalked up their defeats to a lack of ability often became discouraged when attempting to do things of which they were quite capable. Those who believed they had flopped because they hadn't tried hard enough were often inspired to do better. And the phenomena in which early setbacks convinced children they weren't able to complete other tasks was given a name, learned helplessness. I thought that was an interesting concept. So she decided to conduct an experiment, and it became her PhD dissertation. She assembled a group of elementary school children and identified by the teachers as helpless. And if they encountered equations that they couldn't solve, they suddenly couldn't finish ones they'd successfully solved earlier. Sort of that generalization, yeah. The group was divided into two. Now, this wasn't, I think this was, one was just left without an influence, and the others were trained to attribute their errors to a lack of effort and were encouraged to keep plugging away. The children in this cluster learned to push on in the face of adversity and often ended up succeeding. Remember, one group was trained to attribute their efforts to a lack of effort and were encouraged to keep. Children in the other set of students was not coached one way or the other, and they showed no improvement at all. So the paper on this subject became one of the most widely referenced in contemporary psychology. Thought that might be sufficient reason to bring this to your attention. The positive reception of her investigation inspired Ms. Dweck to make the area her life's work and would be the catalyst in a new field of educational psychology, achievement goal theory. And she came to believe that people who held a fixed mindset saw intelligence as something established at birth. People with a growth mindset, you and I, viewed the world, brain as malleable and a complex organ that could be trained to produce better results. Hear, hear. On that score, Dweck believed students could be taught to adapt a growth mindset if it is demonstrated to them that the brain, through hard work and persistence, is capable of producing greater results. Now, you've heard this in the analysis of ritual over the years. All of you have echoes of this same notion. Repeated effort. Mm-hmm. So, and that came from a much earlier period than Ms. Carol Dweck's work. So she believed that we can be taught. She's talking about children. The Masonic involvement talks about the agency of you and I as adult. So this Stanford University professor, now 71, and her views on learning and intelligence have long been the subject of much praise and debate. So if you're inclined, you can probably find this at a used bookstore. It was published in 2006. It's called Mindset: The New Psychology of Success. I really don't like the self-help, mill that's out there just making money off of people. But this one, I think it says, boy, if you need to know more than that, you've got the kernel. If you need to, you're the kind that likes to learn the context, by all means, get the book. So have you ever heard of the Yidan Prize? Y-I-D-A-N. Well, recently, Gary Mason, he's a writer for a newspaper in this country. Well, one that I follow, I really like his work. Wrote an article about Dweck and this, she being the inaugural winner of the Yidan Prize. It's the richest annual, one of the richest annual awards of its kind, $8 million to be split evenly between two winners. And it's named after its benefactor, Charles Chen Yidan, a Chinese tech billionaire who wants to scale up innovative research projects around the world, particularly in impoverished countries. The idea is just breathtaking. Teach the mind. Achievement goal theory. So that when faced with adversity, the reflection isn't on the inability. It's on the lack of effort, the need, in fact, to continue to strive. Now, all of this does have a downside, of course. Everything, we look at the intention and the reality. And we have good science around this. So the side that we want to be mindful of is the work of Alfie Kohn, an American author and lecturer on the subject of human behavior. And he wrote a piece a couple of years ago that compared Dweck's proposition that kids perform better if they see the merits of hard work to a verbal doggy biscuit. And he cited his own studies that show students praised for good effort by their teachers often interpret it that, as a sign that they're dumb, not smart. All of this I'm applying to the work that I've seen going on and the learning. And I wondered, why does one of us, thrive in that environment, the challenge, and enjoy it, and others seem overwhelmed by the experience? You know what I'm talking about. And that's not just within the confines of the lodge. This is in real life. Why does that happen? Oh, well, that weak-minded person is just stupid. Yeah, far from it. Far from it. Let's pay attention. There's a little more going on. So if that being the case, I've spoken, I think this adds to something that we spoke about earlier. We talked about earlier on Masonic Effects, the difference between praise and encouragement. See, he's saying that the patronizing pat in the head is ineffective because people, the brain, the human mind, understands that they are being treated as if they're stupid. They need that patronizing attitude. And you're listening to somebody who struggled with that whole notion of patronizing behavior. Not that, you know, I've read the definition of it, but to see it, to understand that it's unpleasant. And it's different than it, often I see that I've noticed that it's different than what's intended. This is speaking to you as the mentor of yourself, the mentor of somebody else. You can't be, I think, useful. I'm not talking about people that are, trained in these ideological approaches to educating children. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you as a free thinker with an open mindset. So there is more than one determining factor in a child's success or a man's or woman's success. Some of it has to do with the skill of the people around us who've taught us and the setting. These are huge indicators. You know, the privilege, if you are born to privilege, you do better than somebody that hasn't. Now, we often cite exceptions. Well, the exception really doesn't make the rule, does it? The outlier doesn't make the rule. How often do we hear professional athletes encouraging children, young people, to improve themselves through education and not to put all their eggs in one basket? Because the number of people that achieve the heights of professional athletics is very proportionally very small. But your chance of improvement and improving the quality of your life increases exponentially with good education. And one of the things I was taught from, I think it was from some writings handed to me by some Jewish friends, is that one thing that can never be taken away, no matter what the effort is. Whether somebody is trying to rob you of your humanity, nobody can take your education away. And whether you have a penny in your pocket, your priorities are certainly not necessarily cerebral when you feel that pain in your stomach and you haven't eaten, or you're worried about your children. Let's keep it real here. But the quality of life is enhanced through education. And there are many portals, many roads to that. So I want to thank Gary Mason for his very thoughtful article, but I wanted to put that out there for you to see if there's is some application in real terms for achievement goal theory. And are there applications in the order? Does that enrich the environment? There's a little something to help us digest that and top up your glass with your favorite beverage as you listen to the program. This is Fola Dada, Tony Toth in concert in Germany. My Foolish Heart. I love it, man. Thank you.
must be close to mine. Beware my foolish heart. But should I even
sometimes it's just breathtaking. Ah, I thought that was a Fola Dada. Her voice is just captivating. And a shout out to the, my apologies for butchering the German language, the Landespolizei Orchester Baden-Württemberg. The timing are very, very tight, group. And unabashedly, a shout out to what's going on in Germany. And don't make any mistake, I'm trying to find the parallels in some of the other countries, listeners and places around the world where the obvious, the outliers are doing some really pretty interesting things. But in this country, the leadership has embraced some of the best ideals of humanity. And are adjusting. Yes, it's an imperfect kind of an existence. They have ups and downs, but they have the courage, the audacity, the confidence to apply themselves diligently to achieve. They'll apply themselves, and they're going to absorb a number of people into an amazing culture. An amazing culture. Later in the show, or perhaps next week, we'll get into some of the music from Germany in between the First and Second World War. The arts were alive, philosophy was alive, mathematics was alive, music was amazing. So a tip of the hat from all of us, I can say, to what was going on there. As a prelude, as a standard, for all the warts and scars and all the imperfections of history, to be able to step forward is the result of an intelligent, thoughtful group. I think that whole mindset would make wonderful masons. And don't get too sulky and long-faced when you're thinking that I'm hinting about Freemasonry as an incomplete model. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We're not so arrogant to think that we've achieved the universal formula, the understanding of everything. Certainly not. We too, and our order is in the process of constant growth and constant change, as you and I. The commentary today, I think, is it is a little terse, but you be the judge for me, okay? We might think we know what was going through the boy's mind if you were a physicist, do you think you would be familiar with Faraday's work? If you were Michael Faraday, would you have familiarized yourself with the works of Humphrey Davy or Thomas Brand? But we are us. Does history have lessons for us as we come to terms with Masonry? Who are the pivotal thinkers of the day who will propel Masonry into the future? Given the inclination of the Agora, the rashness of our peers, would we revile or accept their challenging ways? Progress, change, is a lumpy affair, rarely adapted holus bolus. Often new ideas, outliers, are comfortable to young, open minds. The courageous immortality of youth pressing against the boundaries that come into existence when they only are observed. They are essential to organizations that thrive if care is taken with the introduction. Offered as a clumsy threat, Luddites dancing wildly. Offered as a curious offshoot, starts conversation. Faraday, would you have been familiar, if you were a physicist, would you have been familiar with the work of early mathematicians? And if you were those mathematicians, would you have been familiar? Well, we could say probably. I don't mean idea thieves. There's some famous people that have been revisionists of history. They stole ideas from great minds, and history is unkind to the thieves, and more kind to the those who had ingenuity. So I wondered, what of the ingenuity around us today? It does exist, and it exists within our lodges and in our walls. But recognizing that and doing something about it, well, the lesson that we're taught, if you have the good fortune to go to Roslyn, you can actually, does it help to see it, what's in the mind? I'm not sure. But it was remarkable to see the apprentice pillar. And you know the story about the apprentice pillar. Or yacht. You can all do the research and find it if you're curious, and I hope you are. But the lesson isn't about this, a murderous group that we're not necromancy. We're not a murderous, calamitous group. This is a group that's sensitive to the idea that that we don't always embrace beauty as we ought. We don't always embrace genius and talent as we ought. Not in the marketplace, not in the large mass numbers. Often the masses, as we know, and we're part of that in another role of our lives, are prone to rashness, thoughtlessness. We're ready to judge and convict people just on very flimsy information, whether it's an insult to our dignity, not based on whether we know we can determine the truth. And so we're prone to being rash and making mistakes. But it sure does somehow feel good to be rash, to not be thoughtful at all, not to be able to consider the consequence of our action on another human being. They're faceless. We don't know that person or what they're accused, whether they're valid, whether the whole case against them has been because of a racial mix-up. Huh? Is it harder to be us today? I can't really claim that. I claim it's hard to be me. But no harder than it is to be a disenfranchised black refugee in some places of the world. There are so many places in the world, though, cultures that are very grounded and confident in their capacity to influence. Oh, the people coming from other places are panicky, and they'll cling to their old ways. That's their comfort blanket. They have to, however bizarre it might seem to you and I. But you remember the culture, the cultures that have produced and strengthened masonry, and vice versa, have appeal, have enormous appeal. Yes, we've demonstrated to ourselves that we can be fierce when that's called for. So there's no question in our mind that our actions today appeal to any element of cowardice or neglect or denial or avoidance. For most of us, it takes a great deal to get us up, to get these nations on their feet. Not that, because there's always some little pissant that will be annoying. But if you poke the old bear too much, if you they cross that barrier into irrationality, and believe me, they all have, all demonstrated that capacity. They're not necessarily where they are and because they were given their freedom. These freedoms are hard fought and always will be. But God help the world when that irrationality surfaces. So we know that. We know. This is like Tolkien's dragon, you know, that fierce power that just slumbers. Just slumbers. But so dangerous. Yeah. Better that it sleeps well and deeply. Better that we have the metaphor to allow us to do that. If we become, you know, neurotic and worrisome and aren't quite sure of our, it's not our manhood, it's our stability, aren't quite sure of our strength, well, come sit down and talk to one of us. We'll help you. Just because somebody's, so there's some bully or loudmouth out there, there's some provocateur, it doesn't change the true nature of the Masonic environment. It's maybe shameful and hurtful, but the truth underlying what we are about is that stability. Put together firm foundations for a life. And we draw on very beautiful and interesting metaphors to help us teach and to reinforce our learning. It has that that wonder that occurred when we broke away gradually from the struggle with the darkness, with superstition governing our world. And Sir Billy Connolly teaches us this too. Sir Billy Connolly, the epic Scottish mentor to the world. Somebody saying bad and threatening things, to consider that doesn't change our nature. It's like, don't do that. That's like, don't, you know. If you're looking for a bad time, well, yeah, it's entirely possible. But yeah, don't do that. In the meantime, we're going to live relaxed and protect our friends and like-minded people and have a pint and listen to some good music and enjoy life. Enjoy. Isn't that what the point of, isn't happiness the point of it all? Yeah. Well, if you don't believe that, believe this. This is Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. I had to reflect on some music that just sort of stimulated this process around the world. Hey, this is Art Blakey. The Jazz Messengers happen to be, if you're not familiar, Freddie Hubbard, Curtis Fuller, Wayne Shorter, Cedric, Cedar Walton, and Jamie Merritt. Check this out. This is called Crisis. Life is good. Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. Wanted to follow up on some of the things that have been going on internationally and within the Masonic Order. I'm talking about the awareness of the threats to democracy that are possible because through the misuse or the militarization of social media. Yeah, all that data about you and I, every time we make a mouse click or use any computerized systems. So the data and defining information about us is being accumulated. And some of these major social media structures sell that information, and that's how they profit. It's not like we get something for nothing. They sell that information, and it's used or misused. We're finding out right now something that, you know, we were doing manually back, I think the first time that we know about it was back around the First World War, where the result was gave rise to notions of how to advertise and get people to, you know, think better about certain products than others. That manipulation, the first started was, through a military wanting to ensure that on the home front, everybody was of the same mindset. Because we didn't want too many free thinkers out there making up their own decisions about the true cause and whether it was worth the rage and murder and mayhem. And then after we have the advantage of listening to old soldiers tell us that as they shake their head, that yes, they were brave, not because they were doing a job, not because they were walking around with their chests puffed out. They had a job to do, grim work. And how many times have we heard old soldiers in every of the major conflicts struggle to get home, to end the conflict, move the diplomats, change the mindset of the politicians, and move away, put the weapons down. So in front of us, there's always been secrets out there, secret answers, whether we want to accept them or not. The more effect that you have on the impact that Masonry has on the world is as thoughtful, as intelligent men and women, as intelligent people. I'm sorry, it's not about a gender issue. It's not like that star is male and that star is female. Although, you know, the way the ancient Arabs wrote about the stars, I like this. It has some appeal, you know. Thank you, Cassiopeia. Thank you, Andromeda, you know. Thank you for that. But the answers have been right in front of us. What influences that? Masons have been able to pass along that story about the Christmas Eve where soldiers on both sides put their weapons down and sang together and had a cigarette. And in some places they played a bit of football, a bit of soccer. And we know that to be true because it's like one degree away from some of us, 2 degrees away from others. There was a nobility. The carnage of so-called modern war has erased that sense, made that more obscure, more opaque. But the nobility of soldiering is still there. We don't hear about those acts of kindness. And, you know, when two people are coming together facing fear, what that does to them in the moment. And we refer to that with as an expression of the nobility of the human spirit. But the secrets, the answers, the things that bring us together and resolve conflict, resolve murder, resolve the killing, it's not necessarily that it's a panacea, as we know from our examination of Thomas More's work on utopia. We can enter into a utopian state, but it's that authority that's used to achieve it that's just numbing and unsettling to the human spirit. We just can't seem to tolerate it. Being told what to do all the time just doesn't seem to work. Oh, that it should work. We would like the benefits, but we would rather tolerate, letting one guilty person go off than to condemn an innocent. Or how does the saying go, 1,000 guilty to 1 innocent? Well, some of us have to apply that in real life, and real life is different than our hopes and dreams, isn't it? Yeah. The answers seem to be in front of us, and I want to ask you what you think about this. This is a work where I found answers to the questions going on about secrecy and privacy. Well, I began to wonder, as I tend to do, what happens when, depending on how far back we go, how far back do we, was this question being asked, and how was it being handled? And is it an ideology, or is it an indoctrination, or is it propaganda, you know? The conspiracy, is this part of a grand conspiracy theory? Ah, dear. I'm going to put on a little music. This is Easy Money, St. Andrew Jazz Band, and Jesse Davis. So when we come back, we'll get into this revelation about how secrecy was handled, how the messages were conveyed. Yeah. Oh, this is Students, by the way. Students.
Thank you.
It's young students. They just are amazing. They don't know they're not supposed to be able to do that stuff. It's like my friends that are, you know, amputees or blind, and you know, they're playing golf better than me. They're skiing. She climbs mountains. They race. But it's like, don't they know they're not supposed? You know how hard it is to be me when you're fooling around outdoing me, and it's like, man, I'm able-bodied. I love you guys. I haven't acknowledged the Invictus Games and all the men and women and families and everybody that gets it. It's just an amazing expression of us. Fantastic, just phenomenal, and congratulations. Nice work. Let me put it that way. Nice work. Well done. We're just going to end the program on a. I don't know. This is painful. I don't think we can. I'm going to have to pick this up with you next week. This is. I want to talk to you about how. How myths and folklore and fairy tales have been right there in front of us. You know, it's like made quite innocuous. It's like the riveting political satire that comes through a comedy, you know, or where the jester, the court fool, was able to say and do things with the king that would cause the death of anybody else. What was being conveyed? Personally, I'm a fan of the Russian fairy tales. I'm not quite sure why. Just, well, if you've read them, you'll understand why. Just there's a beauty and a poignancy. There's something there. But every nation, you read Scheherazade, A Thousand and One Arabian Nights, those stories that just have make you smile, make the world smile a bit. So I think better that we don't jump too much into this. It's like how do you cut this off? Imagine the history of a fairy tale as a map. I can't in all justice start that without finishing it, or at least wrapping it up some way, bringing it to some conclusion. So we'll pick this up next week, if you don't mind. And on the way out, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here. Thank you, world. Thank you, Masonry, for the opportunity to connect with so many amazing people and inspiring me and helping me to be a better person, overcome my shortcomings and to be a more natural and understanding person all the time. And it's a chore, a work in progress. Eh? Commit those acts of Masonic random kindness and make that the defining gesture that helps the world understand who we are and what we are. And I'll look forward to being with you again next week. Thanks.
Ready. Yes, you're ready.